Welcome back to the First Crack Podcast, firstcrackpodcast.com. This is Gary Van Buren, and this is number 77, The Return of the Smith 3 on the State of Podcasting. That's right, Christopher Smith from Croncast and Pale Group Studios, Eric Dahl from the Dahl Pod, and me, you know, from the First Crack Podcast, workingpathways.com, and a whole bunch of other places, sit and chat about, podcasting. Anyway, so a couple of housekeeping things before we get into the conversation. One, background music, theme song by Jeremy Piller, jeremypiller.com. Thanks, Jeremy. And First Crack Podcast now has a comment line number thing via the powers of Skype voicemail, 612-284-4148. 612-284-4148. Give it a ring while you're driving around. Oh, pull over first. Also, I'm doing a refresh, rewrite of the WP iCal plugin connecting WordPress to iCal and associated applications. It now supports multiple categories. It's got GMAPs in it. It's lovely and tasty, so check it out. GaryVanBuren.com/WPiCal. Also, upcoming events penciled in on your calendar, save the date, all that sort of stuff. Acadia Cafe here in downtown Minneapolis, June 12th. Podcast MN is doing a podcasting experiment live to hard drive. We're going to line up half a dozen of the Podcast MN podcasters, and we're going to podcast from a live audience, you know, a la Twit, a la some of the better Gilmore Gangs, etc. Speaking of which, let's jump right into the conversation.
I've only got about probably like 20 minutes. So.
Let's get cracking.
All right, then.
Let's get first right. Cracking.
Thanks for the plug. So podcasting is not cool, according to Forrester Research.
That's what they say.
That's... I feel like I saw multiple contradictory quotes from, because I didn't actually read the report, right? I just saw headlines and people discussing it, and I feel like there were contradictory quotes going around of what the report actually said. Do either of you have sort of a handle on what the major points were?
Nobody knows about it. Yeah, nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna pull up I wrote a post on it.
I thought you were gonna say you wrote a poem about it.
I wrote a haiku.
That seems to be so anti-podcasting. I wrote a poem about it.
Yeah, maybe that's all right, because no one's gonna listen to it anyway, right?
According to all right. Okay, so I summed it up over at the Work Better blog. Her 2 points. I sussed them down to 1. It's hard to accurately measure. And 2, existing audio is more valuable than a brand new show. And 3, nobody knows about it.
What does that mean, existing audio is more valuable? Because I agree with the first point. Yeah, it's hard to measure. And I don't think that's going to be overcome in a while.
Right.
Until we get some sort of better metric of how to sort of judge what's happening. But can you say a little more about what...
I'm pulling up the summary. 1% of online health.
But
jeez, this is so freaking slow.
But didn't
I haven't gotten the MacBook Pro yet, so you got to bear with me a little bit.
I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it.
No, not yet.
Not yet.
First generation.
Oh no! I'm waiting for the one that's going to come out later this month or next month.
Okay.
Yeah. When they refresh the iBooks and the 17 inches.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. Somehow the Forrester blog didn't work for me. I don't know.
Maybe that's all right. Forrester, they don't know much about the internet, so I think they're proving that. I'm glad that somebody, you know, like Forrester is doing it. However, when it's 9 months old, it's kind of pointless to put it out.
You know what? My son's only 5 months old, and he's not walking yet. I think his legs are broken.
Exactly. That was, you know, my whole thing this week, and I've been waiting, and I really want to get a hold of Rob Greenlee From what show does he do? Web Talk or whatever?
Yeah, Web Talk. Oh God. Yeah. Oh yeah, that reminds me. I got to get this.
And now he's working with Melodio, but he's done a lot of work with Microsoft, and that's all I have to say is that when Microsoft walks into our space, the impact that we saw from iTunes will be ridiculously minuscule.
Mm-hmm.
When Windows Media Player has access to podcasts, and it's coming because every day, if you look in your user agent log, Microsoft, I don't know if everyone's getting these hits. I bet most everyone is anyway. Microsoft Research. And they're hitting almost everything in those feeds. I believe what they're doing is caching.
Okay.
Most likely the content.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like that bot is even going out and either downloading or reading the ID3 tags out of those files. So that is my pure speculation at this point. But as far as the Forrester thing goes, I mean, when Microsoft steps into this space, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Did you guys both get that URL I just sent?
Yeah, I did. And I actually read, cool. I read your post when you first wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I read it then too.
So here's a snippet from the Forrester blog. Should companies be putting podcasting on the back burner? Hardly. Content that already exists, such as earning calls, training updates, and executive presentations, are all excellent fodder for podcasts.
Yikes. That just seems to be kind of, I mean, I guess when you're talking about podcasting as a delivery mechanism, it makes sense, but they still have a long way to go, with either, who knows? If only 1% of the people know about it, I don't even know why they would, purport to know what works.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Personally impacted by iTunes very much. They still haven't gotten my feed right. So I don't know. I don't know if it's going to matter.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I get half of my audience from iTunes.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Yeah, I have probably 2/3 or more come from iTunes. Yeah.
I just don't know. That just seems like a really useless way to manage podcasts to me. But then again, I just deleted a gig worth of podcasts the other day to open up some hard drive space.
Right. Well, I think, for me, what happened with my audience was an audience that was more apt, I think, to use iTunes as opposed to still continue using Juice or...
Mm-hmm.
What was iPodder at the time when it came out, So I don't know. I mean, people feel comfortable with what they know. And I mean, the fact that, Windows Media Player ships on every PC, with an aggregator built in, that's a whole lot easier than going out and downloading QuickTime/iTunes.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And I mean, with the percentage of people that are on Windows, because right now, I was looking at my numbers today since I moved over to Croncast and I'm now keeping track of everything on my own. 258 of my subscribers are on Macintosh, which is huge. I mean, when my daily subscriber rate is anywhere between 400 and, 4.25 average. So, I mean, for me, those are unique IPs during a day, so... I mean, that's a lot. I mean, that's really disproportionate to the number of users.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. When you go back.
Well, the number of users in general, or the number of podcast users.
I think podcast.
I don't think that the number of podcast users really is the same proportion as the general population as far as Mac versus Windows or.
No,
I think you're absolutely right there. I think it's much more 50-50. Than it is in the general population.
Mm. Well, do you think that's because of the burst of iTunes, or do you think that more of the creative people that learned about this stuff are using Macs?
I think it's the latter. But I don't know. Maybe you have a different opinion.
No, I think it's partially because people that I know already have sort of the software and the tools and all those sorts of things already baked in. Mm-hmm. They just need to, on the Mac side anyway, just tie them together. And I know to some degree, if you have some web development knowledge and independent of platform, you have these the tools you need to do a podcast. I think that's more of it. I think people that are interested in what technology can do are doing this, and those that aren't are not. And I think the people that are interested in what technology can do are split more 50-50 on the platform side of things than anyone else.
I would bet you're right.
For me, at home, I have a PC desktop at home, and then I have a Mac laptop that I use for both business and personal. And it was just so much easier to record everything onto the Mac as far as all the audio editing and all the audio recording. So I just ended up doing that. I tried a couple times on the PC, and it was just too much of a hassle. So, I mean, using both every day, I just switched over and used the Mac solely for the podcast stuff.
Right. So Chris, is it a hassle?
On a PC?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm still afraid of my Mac. So.
You're still afraid of your Mac?
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at it.
It's so friendly.
Well, yeah, I mean, I haven't touched anything on it. I don't know. I mean, I'm nervous about it because I don't know the platform. And, I'm so used to using, you know, Photoshop or Illustrator or anything else on a Mac. But the audio stuff scares me.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm just used to doing it.
Right. And you're concerned that, once you go Mac, you'll never go back.
That is quite possibly my biggest fear.
I mean, you have an easy life if that's your biggest fear, my friend.
Yeah. No, I don't know. It's one of those things where I guess what I'm afraid of is I'm afraid that I really will like it more. I truly am.
Mm-hmm. Like your mistress.
Yeah, you know, and it's not even like it's a good Mac. It's good. It's new. It's one of the, I don't even know what it is, the 20-inch. I don't know. It's flat. It's 20 inches, and it's white. What are they called? Tapeworm.
The spam in my inbox.
Yeah, iMac. That's it. That's what it says on the back. I mean, I'm bad. I'm serious. Like, my 5-year-old kid plays with it more than anything, you know.
Nice.
So
just back to the Forrester report, I was like, my wondering is how much, I mean, so there's, we can always, I mean, we can talk and question the validity of the report or how the research was done or how old or relevant it is. But I think the interesting question is accurate or valid or not, what has been and what will be the impact of a report like that on how media perceives podcasts, how that's picked up within the community, within the podcast community, or within communities that are sort of on the verge of thinking about picking up podcasting or getting involved with it in some way or not. Will the Forrester report just be seen for what it is, or will it be taken up as a mantle for people to not get into podcasting or to say, oh, it's just a fad and it will die out?
I actually hope that the reaction is the latter, but not for those reasons. I think that the technology is way too immature to get the exposure that it's been getting for the last 9 months. And if people like Forrester and big media and traditional media just stop paying attention to us for a while, we can actually do some cool stuff, and you really give them something worth talking about once we have it. I think right now it's way too early for them, and I think that's what the Forrester, if anything, that's what the Forrester research confirmed, is that it's way too early for us to even write this report.
Right.
I sort of agree. I mean, I think the problem, though, is, I mean, that the genie's out of the bottle, you know, to use an empty metaphor. But I mean, the big media has already been invited to the party. If you were to go on a website like Simply Hired or something, you know, any of the others, Monster or whatever, but Simply Hired, simply because it, again, oh man, because it aggregates, you know, almost every job site out there. And you search for podcasting or podcast production, and you're going to get some companies that are heavily invested in it. I mean, obviously, number one is MTV Networks. They've been hiring for every one of their channels, VH1, MTV, MTV2, MTV Jams, Hits, as well as Nickelodeon, and are really searching heavily for people to do kids' podcasts. And the other side of that is feelers out there. But NPR is going whole hog. WGBH has a subsidiary called Boston Public Media, which is the for-profit side of their production, that I think a lot of these places have big investments in it. And I think that report makes more of an impact than I think it does on the big guys. I think most of them have already bought in. And, you know, hell or high water, they're going to have to, you know, make this work. I mean, or somebody's going to lose their job.
Wow, that's much more dire and interesting than the Forrester Report.
Well, you know, I think it's the truth. I mean, I think that, you know, these big guys have to make it happen. And, you know, they're not used to failing, so.
Well, Chris, you're in a unique position to be actually developing some of these things for these people.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, and I mean, they are they know what they want, but they still want. I mean, they want the big media feel with all their content. They want it professionally designed. However, they do want what I found is most of them still do want the podcasting feel. You know, they want that sense of dialogue, of conversation, and that inside glimpse into the people's lives who are delivering those podcasts. It takes them a little longer to understand that, you know, they should be doing that, you know, once they get involved, because they're so used to the same reason that many people like podcasting, you know, with a higher quality recording, like myself. Is because it's what you're used to hearing. And that's what people like. They like, you know, good sound quality. They don't want to be moving the volume dial up and down, you know, or, you know, a sweeper misplaced or gaps in sound. You know, they like to have that stuff. However, people really like to feel like they have a connection. And I think a lot of that has to do not only with, you know, this need for human communication that's not, you know, radio puke coming at you, you know, blah, at the top of the hour, you know, any of that crap. They want to hear real people. But I think a lot of it, too, stems from reality television, you know, and the rise of our ability to sit and stomach watching regular people do really fucked up stuff. So.
Like podcast?
Well, yeah, torturing ourselves in our basements.
I think it's interesting because you mentioned that, Chris, last week. And I think it really gets at what's the definition of podcasting. Mm-hmm. Is podcasting really, I mean, you can look at it from a technical definition, you know, from, you know, this audio sort of source that's, you know, put through an RSS feed and, you know, you can subscribe to it. But what mm-hmm. you described,
the distribution both, side.
Right. But what you've described both this week and last week is that what podcasting really means is it's more that sort of content style and how it's presented and how the people sort of interact with each other and with the audience. And I think that that's interesting to look at the definition of podcasting from that sort of stylistic perspective.
Eric, you brought up something that I've wanted to really dig into for a while now, and that's the distinction between podcasting as a distribution mechanism and podcasting as a unique, distinct media form.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that something... that difference is something that we've overlooked, and only a few unique individuals know of, say, the difference between television as a distribution method and television as a media form,
mm-hmm.
right? You try to shoehorn a feature-length film into television, and it's not going to work, right? The special effects just don't work. They look cheap and crappy no matter how much you spend on them for the cinema experience. They don't translate to the smaller screen, yet some things work really, really well in the TV form. And I wonder if this is the first sort of entity thing where that separation is so distinct. Because we can take NPR, you know, everything that NPR is broadcasting, wrap it in an RSS feed, and we have a podcast. But that may not fly.
Right.
In the technical terms, absolutely. But, you know, like Turner Classic Films, we have to do something to that to really make it click in this media form. We have to edit it for length or whatever, cut out the dirty words or add in more dirty words, something like that.
See, that would be great. I mean, that would be true podcasting. Just saying it because you can. No, I totally agree. I mean, a lot of what's happening, I mean, where the distinction needs to happen truly is when you're delivering that content. Because I know when I'm listening to something that's been recorded, you know, with voiceover people or whatever it is, if it works or not. You know, it's just like being a director, you know, on set saying, no, you're not hitting your mark. You know,
right.
I mean,
you know, you're touching on a point that has been bugging me the last few days as I've been listening to a lot more new and different podcasts. AmigoFish.com, thank you.
Dave Slusher.
Yeah. So many of them sound like people are reading from a script, and if they're not reading from a script, then it's the spontaneous banter like we're having now.
I mean, and then you add in all the other variables, which are, you know, chemistry, you know, which, you know, are background sounds, if there are any, you know, are these people using sound effects? Is it, you know, is there an audio bed, you know? And, you know, I mean, it's strange because so many of the people that started out, you know, at the beginning of this, you know, who aren't around anymore. I mean, I don't know. It's just like everything else. I mean, it's all been done, and it's all being done over and over again, repeatedly, where people are coming out doing 20 shows and you never hear from them again.
Well, right, but I don't know what the problem with that is.
I don't think there is a problem.
Okay.
But what I think is interesting is that it's like the sense of history. You know, how do you know where you're going if you don't know where you came from?
Sure.
And I think that's part of the problem where these people who do 20 shows don't get any listeners, and they're just like, I'm out of here. And it just, I think it gets a little more difficult, you know, not because there's so many more people in the space, but because so much of it's already been done. I mean, how many guys out there came out and wanted to be the next Howard Stern, Red Bar Radio, and, you know, it was extremely annoying.
I think that right there is the thing, right? If you're starting a podcast because you want to be the next blank, then you're going to do maybe 20 shows and hang it up because it's not going to fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you'll get lucky somewhere within those 20 and actually find your voice.
Right. Yeah, we could call
That'll guarantee that you do more.
Yeah, yeah. We could call it this will be the Dave Slusher Show. It was like, you know, I mean, it was like Dave's like second or third podcast was like when you know, just do podcasts. And after your third or fourth one, you'll find your voice, you know, try to be somebody else, you know, try to imitate somebody's style, figure out what works for you. And by the third one, you'll have it figured out. And if you don't, you won't be doing it anymore.
Right.
You know, and I mean.
And to me, the biggest barrier right now is production process.
Yeah. I don't think that'll go away either.
Oh, I disagree with you completely.
I don't think it's going to go away.
Huh. What I'm waiting for is the production process to be as easy as me dialing a number and leaving a message. To me, that's what it needs to be like.
Right. Well, I think
whether or not I have an audio bed behind that, hey, that would be a really cool bonus. You know, if I could play some music while I'm leaving a message and have it, you know, a flip of a switch, easy to do.
Yeah, I think there will be, I think it will get to that level on some degree for a certain sort of spectrum of the audience or the producers, right? But I still don't see it as that it being that easy for everyone to do it, and there's going to be a categorical difference between podcasts that are produced in the way that you just described versus ones that take more time, and that that threshold is enabled, or that chasm is enabled to be crossed by sort of increased or decreased production time or whatever it is because of new technologies or new software products or whatever. Whatever it is that sort of breaks that down.
You know what I think the real difference between those two that you're talking about, Eric, is? The difference I see is whether or not Christopher Smith gets paid for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I'll still I'll still continue to get paid, but I may have to be a little more creative about it.
What do you mean?
It's always going to come down to, with a lot of those tools, it'll still be canned, it'll be canned music, it'll be the same loop you've heard, 85 times in a lot of other podcasts, but I agree. I think that, it needs to get to that point, and it will. But I think it's going to take time, and as fast as things have gone, I think it's still going to take time before we reach that point.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And I don't know, maybe it's a downfall on my part, but when I look at blogs that are just like a simple blogger template, I immediately prejudge the content that's in there as potentially less valuable because they've gone to so little time to put together, a wrapper presentation for the information that they're presenting. And I think it's the same way with podcasts. If you reduce that threshold to make it really easy to record and upload and publish these podcasts, there's still this categorical difference between the information and how we prejudge that information that's being presented in the podcast.
I think you have an interesting point there with the templated blogger stuff, the lack of a unique template for the web blogs. And I think about that every time that I see the default WordPress template used, and I go straight for the RSS feed, never look back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So, because in NetNewsWire, I can make it look whatever I want it to look like.
Right.
And I even told somebody the other day, they asked about my websites. I'm like, seriously, my websites are just skinned RSS feeds.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah, that was me.
That was you?
That was me.
I'm glad I can.
I came to the realization 2 weeks ago, especially building this new website for Croncast, where once I finished up the cast lock stuff for ID3, I was like, I can do anything I want with this, anything now. It's just in a database. I'm following the tag structure. It'll do anything that I want. My site is pointless. And once earlier this week, the site went live last night, but for the last week, I've been running the RSS feeds and monitoring them. And I get anywhere between 400 and 425 unique visitors to the RSS daily. I got anywhere on a given day, on a weekday, 75 to 120 unique IPs visited the web page. What's more important?
Exactly. And what is Google Analytics not counting?
Right. Yeah. I was just like, it's almost disturbing because that was data that I, as you're talking about, it's data that you're not seeing. I wasn't seeing
Absolutely.
It.
Right. And that's why I sometimes giggle when I see people, selling banner ads on their website.
It's true. I swear it's almost like a whole new world. I've got my newfound optimism all about RSS. seriously. It's become such an interesting animal to me that, it's been there. It's just like the light went on, I guess. Maybe the only people that are really paying attention or have been paying attention at this point, business-wise, have been Feedburner, to come out and start counting that. Obviously on a quality scale.
I just don't get Feedburner. I don't get them. I don't understand how they would help me.
Well, you can track everything that they're tracking on their own. It's right. The way that they're organizing the metrics for you.
Okay.
You know, I have no idea what kind of, you know, funky algorithms they have running to start producing the numbers that they produce. But they're really close to what I see coming through, because before I send, I have a redirect for all of my one feed that goes through FeedBurner.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other feeds I track manually on my own, but, I track the same information that they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if people started doing that on their own, if somebody were to just come out and figure out how they're producing their numbers, you could create 3 PHP scripts that would run everything exactly the same, minus the graphs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
You could probably pull in a library to handle the graphs for you.
Exactly. Yeah, you could just, you know, glib or whatever. But I mean, you could really. I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, you know, I can tell you how many unique people come in a day. I average it out for, you know, every, you know, from midnight to the time I'm viewing it, the last 24 hours, you know, that whole bit. The same sorts of things they're doing. And it's much more interesting, and it's much more real for podcasters. Mm-hmm. I mean, that truly is the bottom line, because we're not relying, well, we're just like, it's just like creating a web page that relies on someone to have a browser to view it. You know, you're limited to a person who has a browser to view your website. For RSS, I mean, you're kind of stuck with the aggregators. However, there are a lot more aggregators out there, and there are a lot more websites that are aggregating those feeds. Is phenomenal, because nobody's distributing your website like that. They're allowing it to be searched, but they're not distributing it for you. So that's where I see the power.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think at some point, I think the interesting bits may be when there's feeds without a browser-based presentation.
Yeah. I just wait till we put up this NCQ Talk thing, my other podcast. NCQ Talk, ncqtalk.com. I actually, that was one of the things that when we recorded 3 weeks ago, or 2 weeks ago, when I was just at the beginning of my newfound optimism and all riled up and saber-rattling, I said to every educator out there, you don't even need a website. Just get an RSS mm-hmm. feed. That's it.
Sure.
You're done.
Yeah.
Right there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, get somebody to write an XSLT style sheet for you. Pick one up online for free somewhere. Slap
Booyah!
It together. And it's over. You know, yeah. A little form to enter your data in, and it's over with.
Mm-hmm.
So, however... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Eric, you've launched a couple of podcasts for your internal Maya conversations.
Yes, it's true.
rumor has it.
I only say that because I don't think we've recorded one since before my paternity leave.
Ah, so, okay. I was actually...
One scheduled for recording tomorrow afternoon.
Nice.
3 p.m.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, interested in...
Not the big one. Not the 9 o'clock one.
So Garrett,
I know,
well,
you need
question?
To come down.
I mean, I'm interested in your thoughts on using podcasts as in that way, as part of a development effort, as part of a project documentation effort, as part of a sort of a knowledge culture sharing effort within an organization.
Yeah, so... Just a backstory a little bit. One of the major reasons I did it at work was a lot of people in the human sciences group were doing interesting work on other projects. But we didn't have a lot of time to sit down and discuss what each other was doing and then learning mm-hmm. from those projects. So it was like, oh, you know, this would be a great way to sort of record and capture these conversations. Well, one, in the first place, is to actually implement those conversations and to make them happen in the first place, because it wasn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
So let's sit down, let's pick a time and just have a conversation about a topic that has to do with research methodologies or whatever it is, and you know, let's discuss this and then capture it. And then, so that's really where the value was in just engaging in the conversation. And then, sure, let's publish it. I mean, we might as well. We have the audio content. You know, we have a website that's putting out sort of what we're doing as far as research goes. internally. So let's just put it out there. And if other people find value in it, you know, that's great. But that's above and beyond the sort of initial purpose of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I haven't gone back and actually listened.
Oh, wow. You edited that? You didn't just put them up?
It's a little bit. Just like, because they, some of them got really long. Like, I mean, I think one of them in there is like an hour and 15 minutes, and it was longer than that. Just because we happened to be recording it in a room where there were comfortable chairs up and record it. But so the head of the department was listening to him the other day, and he was like, you know, I enjoyed those. I thought they were really good. There's some good information in there, and, you know, I want you to keep doing this.
Cool.
So it's great, and it's a way for, so we just had a new hire, and they could come in and sort of, we've only done three up to this point, projects that have happened in the past year before they were even at the company, and they can sort of catch up on what's going on. And
nice.
It's another way to sort of educate people on what's going on internally. So there's that aspect, and then I know we had a chat about sort of using it at more as project documentation and things like that, and so we were having a brainstorming session the other day for a project, and we were capturing some of it on whiteboards in the room. And I was just like, I'll be right back. So I ran to my desk.
Okay.
And I grabbed, I have what I call my media bag, which Kelly, my wife, makes fun of me all the time for having it, but it keeps, you know, I have my camera in there, my video camera, you know, all my cables and, you know, my audio recorder and everything. So I grabbed it and ran back into the room, set up my little microphone really quickly, and just captured like the last hour of this brainstorming session. And it was great because now I can go back. And now as I was trying to think out and like, how are we going to sort of document some of these screens that we're doing? I can go back and not only do I have the pictures of the whiteboards from the diagrams that we drew, but I have the actual,
55 times.
I have the actual argument that was made and the discussion back and forth between a couple of the people of why we ended up making this decision, which those sort of, those logical arguments and then decisions don't always get captured on the whiteboards. You know, it's just sort of the final decision that ends up getting captured. So it's interesting to go back. Now, I haven't put any of those out. You know, we have an audio sort of repository at work for brown bags and all sorts of other sort of internal formal discussions. But I think it's interesting.
Use a different web browser
capturing some of these informal discussions or brainstorming sessions or whatever it is that are just project specific. So I don't know if we'll do anything as far as RSS feeds and publication of those, either internally or externally. But at first, because some of it's confidential, of course, but for internal, you know, we could do internal sort of publication of those types of things.
See, what you guys are doing, Eric, is you're laying down the groundwork to, you know, get your clients interested in something. And then you got to turn around and say, I need something that has, you know, password protection as well as tracking, and, you know, you can't really, no one can download the files if they don't know where they are. Even if they did know where they were, they still couldn't get them because they're not logged in. Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
And who says you can't have advertisements in podcasts? Yeah. Hell yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know. I go back and forth on the secrecy thing, you know, every day. You know, I'm like, I don't know why I created that system, but I know it's going to be valuable to somebody. I mean, it was valuable to me for the magazine, you know, and setting up subscribers and being able to track and everything else. I mean, you know, I mean, that's the real beauty of the cast lock thing is that you can track everything that's happening, not only by user IP. But if somebody signs up, you can actually track them by name. And any other information that they feel free to give you.
Chris, did we ever do anything with the that notion of sort of listener hand raising that we had chatted about before?
No, we haven't.
Okay, we should still do that.
Yeah,
I think that would be an interesting to try out.
I agree.
To try out.
I got to run. We're doing a podcast with the Viva Podcast folks.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
Viva Cron on their site and Cron Viva on our site this week.
Nice. Cron Viva. You know, I wore Cron Viva when I was in junior high. Kept the girls away.
Yeah, it's a cross between, you know, Muskrat and Chanel No. 9.